Good afternoon and welcome everyone to our GE annual Outlook meeting. Today's webcast and event will be recorded, so it'll be available for replay tomorrow on our website. Also on our website at www.ge.com/investor, you'll be able to find the presentation materials for today's event. So everyone in the webcast, please look there and press refresh on your browser if you're having trouble with that. We will have Q&A at the end of the session today. And because it's a large room and we have a webcast going today, please raise your hand. We'll have a page come bring you a microphone and then ask away so we can capture it for our webcast audience. After the Q&A, we'll have a reception here in the hall so you can mix and mingle with several members of our leadership team, including Jeff and the vice chairman. So we'll enjoy that and then wrap up the day. As I always have to say, elements of this presentation are forward-looking and are based on the world as we see it today. Those elements in the world can change, as you know, so please interpret them in that light. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce and turn over to our chairman and CEO, Jeff Immelt.
Thanks. Good afternoon. If any of you in this room today were planning to go see the Mehmet Oz show, you're in the wrong room. I think Nicole Pratt, that might include you, but we'll see. I have five big messages for today. I think we've positioned the company to for solid earnings growth and cash flow growth in the future. We'll go through that. You know, we think our strength in technology, services, emerging markets, big solutions position us well for the future. I think we've really defined the businesses that we want to be in and the ones that really fully utilize the GE competitive advantage. And we think those businesses will be the core to GE's growth in the future. We think the worst is behind us in financial services and that the GE Capital franchise is going to be smaller but still a meaningful part of the company going forward. And that in this cycle, we're going to generate a substantial amount of excess cash, and we're going to be extremely thoughtful about creating shareholder value as we deploy this capital. So these are kind of the five big themes that we'll reiterate and repeat and talk about as we go through the presentation. First, the environment, definitely getting better, challenging, and I'll go through a couple dimensions on terms of how we see the environment. I think in the short-term environment, you know, capital markets are dramatically better. The global economies are stable. The emerging markets are relatively strong. We see certain of the leading indicators, like the ad market, is quite good right now. The government stimulus, I think, is yet to be felt in many of our industries, and we still can see some opportunities out there going forward. But high unemployment remains. There's record levels of excess capacity. Capacity utilization of 70 or 71% is 9 or 10 points lower than the past 25 years on average. Construction and commercial real estate still are challenging, and reforms, healthcare reform, things like that are creating uncertainty. So when we look at the near term, you know, it's going to take investment, organic investment, to drive growth. And we still see good opportunity for cost out. And so in the cycle, our margins will still be high and strong. And we see those as the two dimensions, really, in the near-term economy. The longer-term dynamics, I mean, all of you read about this and, you know, put it in the context of your own firms, but the developed world seems to be growing slowly with big structural challenges, deficits, unemployment, debt levels. And the emerging markets are growing at multiples of the developed world with lower debt, lower deficits, still high unemployment. So, you know, the emerging markets still appear to be a good engine of growth. And the developed countries, while they've stabilized, are going to have some structural challenges. We don't know how much and how fast they're going to grow, but the ability to have a good, strong global footprint seems to be an advantage, again, in this cycle. Mike showed you this chart last week. I mean, the battlefield of financial services has changed, continues to change. You know, we think going forward, primarily banks. You know, I went back to an old presentation I gave here maybe 6 or 7 years ago, where I talked about GE Capital against our key competitors, AIG and CIT and GMAC, and it's a whole other battleground of competitors today. We think the worst days are behind us. There's plenty of room for growth out there post-crisis, and we think origination and domain strength are just key strengths for the company going forward. Lots going on in Washington and Brussels and the governments around the world. I just ticked off some of the major reforms. There's financial reform. You know, that'll have an impact on who the regulators are going to be, how much capital you have to be. I think if you just looked at the House version that went through last Friday. You know, it basically says GE is going to fit into the system, and that, you know, our advantage in small and medium lending is going to be a key strength, I think, as we go through this crisis. Healthcare reform, there's a deal, there isn't a deal. As I was walking over here today, you know, I think there's a sense that there might be a deal now that the Democrats feel more comfortable about. There you have to think about what our costs are going to be as an employer, where reimbursements are going to go. You know, I'd say, the risks and opportunities are in balance. There's going to be new opportunities that emerge in services and healthcare IT and healthcare reform. Energy and climate, you know, I don't know what's going to come out of Copenhagen, but the fact is that the ongoing trend around clean energy is unstoppable. There's going to be some kind of carbon price at some point. There's going to be incentives for technology going forward. We actually view that we're very well positioned for how this shakes out and where this goes in the future. And then there's just going to be a focus on jobs. You see it in Washington. You see it really in every corner of the world. It's going to have an industry focus in places like green technology. And, you know, again, we feel like we're very well positioned as somebody that can create jobs, as somebody that knows how to invest in terms of where this goes. So, you know, the point I'd make here is I don't think this focus on government strategies and government intervention is going to change anytime soon. What we've tried to do is make sure that GE can weather these changes in an advantageous way, and we think we're very well positioned along those lines. So, you know, we can't necessarily pick the environment with a company our size, but I think what we've tried to do is position the company to be a winner in this environment. You know, we're an American company that is huge in winning in emerging markets. We're a great solutions company. We can do clean energy better than anybody else. We can do affordable health care better than anybody else. We're a really strong technology leader, innovator, global finance company, and we think that makes us welcome on a global basis. We know how to make things with low cost, which means we know how to compete in every corner of the world. We know how to compete in China and India and all those places. We think that's a good thing. We're a good partner to small businesses, to governments, to big state-owned enterprises. We think that's a competitive advantage and a high-integrity brand. So if you think about the environment, what we've tried to do is just position the company so that the GE brand is significant and can play in lots of different changes that are going on in the world. Last part of the environment, just wrapping up on 2009. You know, we put this framework out there at this dinner a year ago. And I'd say we're more or less tracking to, you know, having flat industrial earnings for, and that's really energy, technology, infrastructure, C&I. Healthcare is improving in the quarter. We feel good about that. That gives us some momentum and some backlog going into next year. That's a positive. Media, you know, cable and ad markets are positives. So we've had a tough year in network and movies. You've heard us talk about that in the past. Mike talked to you last week about capital finance. We'll be profitable for the quarter, profitable for the year. Good margins, strong cash, and still high losses. And the corporate will be flat with good cost out offset by lots of restructuring this year. And when we look at the dynamics in the fourth quarter, you know, orders will be improving sequentially as we get into the fourth quarter of the year. The services and global business model remain strong. Capital, you know, again, still profitable, as I mentioned before, and the notion that we'll continue to do restructuring throughout the year. So that's kind of the way to think about closing off the year. I think on the right-hand side, you know, when we were here last year, we talked about three real priorities: keeping GE Capital really safe and secure. We've done a lot. I mean, we've improved liquidity, reduced leverage, strengthened the balance sheet. I mean, we've done a lot in GE Capital, and I think it's given us a foundation that we've been able to refocus the business model and be optimistic as we look forward in the future. Again, that's what Mike talked about last week. Still with some headwinds in commercial real estate, for sure. We've been able to outperform in a tough environment. The backlog has grown. The service model has proven itself as we looked at the future. It just maximized financial flexibility. We will be at the high end of what we said for CFOA when we were here a year ago. We've announced some dispositions that gives us surplus cash. So I think whereas we were playing defense when we were here a year ago, I think as we turn the calendar and look at 2010, you can think about the company being back on offense and doing what we do best, and we feel very encouraged by what the team's done this year and where we're positioned. So what I want to do is kind of talk strategically about the company, what we've done, where we're going, what the priorities are, and as a way to kind of set up the framework and how to think about the company financially. So I think if you think about the company post the NBC announcement, this is just it's a simple and more focused company. We're a high-tech infrastructure and service company, and we've got financial services. Our core competency is just broad and deep technology, great installed base management, very strong global brand and distribution, financial strength and discipline, you know, the ability to generate cash and deploy it well, and leadership development. And the way we will leverage this portfolio and these strengths is to continue to make the portfolio more valuable, to generate a significant amount of cash and allocate that to create shareholder value, to continue to drive the enduring growth initiatives that we've been talking about in this room for the past 5 or 10 years, and to really have this competitive advantage and drive it across the company in a way that should allow us through the cycles to outperform our key competitors in EPS growth, margins, and return on total capital. That's really what I want to talk about as the strategy of the company and where we are. It starts with the portfolio. We've just done a lot of work on the portfolio over the last decade. I think if you go back to the early part of the decade, we had about 20% of our earnings in insurance, about 25% in capital finance. Infrastructure was really at the peak of the gas turbine bubble. It was mainly U.S.-based and mainly gas turbine-based. And we had a series of short-cycle businesses that were all more or less close to their peak or had seen their best days, right? And so our focus on the portfolio was to de-risk it by getting out of insurance, to build a stronger global infrastructure portfolio, and to move through or reposition these short-cycle businesses. You know, where we stand today, you know, I think we've repositioned, we've simplified the portfolio, we've made some good investments. I think in the case of capital finance or in the case of where we stood pre-crisis, you know, we'd built a very strong industrial set of businesses, globalized the infrastructure portfolio, and it positioned the company to be able to grow industrial earnings in faster than financial service earnings. At the same time, we've exited plastics and repositioned ourselves on the short cycle side of the business. And so I think when we stand here today, we've got a great set of infrastructure businesses. We've got a capital finance business that needs to be repositioned. And in many ways, we've played through in media and strengthened our media assets and priorities to be very well positioned as we sit here today. I think going forward, we really just have, you know, a simpler task. It's to continue to invest and grow in our infrastructure technology businesses, and it's to create value in our capital finance businesses. So it's a much, I think, easier hand to play when we sit here today than what we've had 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It's a very simple, and I think the moves we've made to strengthen particularly our infrastructure businesses is paying off and really positions us for the next 5 or 10 years of good, solid growth. Think about where we are industrially post-NBCU. It's about a $90 billion revenue business. It's got margins in excess of 16%, return on total capital in excess of 16% at really the worst part of the cycle. So very fundamentally strong. If you look at the last 3 years, we've outperformed the S&P Industrial Index over the last 3 years. And if you think about how these businesses face up into the core strengths of the company, technology, services, global distribution, emerging markets, the big themes, all these businesses are really in the sweet spot of what the company stands for and what we can do. At the same time, I think these businesses are a lot more valuable for two key reasons. One is we began the decade with about 30% of our earnings and services. We end the decade with about 70% of earnings and services. These are in backlog, higher margin, more valuable, easier to protect. And from a geographic diversity standpoint, you know, more than half our revenues are now outside the United States. So this is an incredibly valuable set of industrial businesses that we've kind of repositioned and invested in to grow during the past 5 or 10 years. In financial services, if you look at the left-hand side of the chart, you know, we've said we're going to shrink. from about $480 billion in assets down to $400 billion in assets. And what I show here is we're very well capitalized today at tier one capital of 8%, right? And we can operate as we generate earnings and shrink. You know, these capital ratios will grow. We'll hit 8.5% next year. The question is, will we need to go higher than that? I think that remains to be seen. But the point I would make is that as we shrink the balance sheet, as we grow earnings, as we exit some of the more highly leveraged parts of the portfolio, our capital strength is going to take care of itself. We're going to operate ourselves into whatever tier one ratio we need to have. I mean, I just want you to really understand this point. And it's our goal over the next few years is to restore the capital dividend back to the parent. And so we think we're looking into that in the next few years. We ought to be able to do that again. On the right-hand side, look, we just got into businesses in GE Capital. We let it get too big, and we got into businesses that weren't central to the GE core. And, you know, we're just going to be very disciplined about where the business is and what it looks like going forward. And the core, the four key segments that we're going to focus on are the verticals for sure, because that is right in the sweet spot of domain and risk management and good margins and profitability. The mid-market lending and leasing, which is kind of half of the assets of GE Capital, the businesses we've been in for 30, 40, 50 years, high margin, high return. We've got tremendous competitive advantage in origination and product development, what we can do that banks can't do, risk management and operations. I think in selected consumer areas where we think we can build a competitive advantage and high margins, and we'll look through that. I mean, I think the retail finance business is an incredibly distribution-intensive business that we have real competitive advantage. The PLCC business looks much better today than it did 2 years ago, but we're going to have to continue to evolve and see how the markets change and strategize around that as time goes on. And then in real estate, we're definitely going to be smaller. We're going to work our way through the current crisis, but we do have good domain and expertise. And so the point I'd make on this page is that we are very well capitalized and will continue to be well capitalized, and we will be able to operate ourselves into wherever we need to get to from a capitalization standpoint. And we will be very disciplined and focused as you think about where GE Capital goes in the future. And we should be able to fully earn a 2% plus return on $400 billion in assets, fully earn. And be able to, you know, again, with very high reserves and things like that. So I think financial services, we are in execution mode on a plan that we think can stand the test of time. Now, through this, industrially and financial services, we're just going to generate a lot of cash. I mean, we talked about, as we announced the NBC Universal deal, we talked about ending 2010 with somewhere between $23 and $26 billion of what I call parent cash, available cash, cash that's squirreled away under Keith Sharon's desk. This is the in the lockbox under Keith's desk, right? So that's cash. And then we have a very strong industrial business that generates a lot of free cash flow. You know, we have a set of industrial businesses that generate a lot of free cash flow. And we will always operate the company to have a very high rating with the rating agencies. We'll always do that. But when you think about capital allocation and what we think we need to do, you know, there's just a couple priorities. The first one is to always keep GE Capital safe and secure. And we've said that we contemplate putting $2 billion into GE Capital as part of the income maintenance agreement in the first quarter of 11. So we take, out of this big stash, we take $2 billion and put it there. And then we can invest in infrastructure. You know, we think that there may be opportunities in a disciplined way. We can do organic, inorganic investment in infrastructure. The target there would be to replace the NBCU earnings in some way, but we can be patient. You know, we think we've got enough good organic growth as we work our way through there. We can look opportunistically at buybacks. We've got the preferred instrument that's due in 2011. We look at that. We'll be thoughtful as time goes on to think about where buybacks fit and how that works. And does it look attractive and be opportunistic as we think about that. And then we want to have a payout ratio, go back to the historic payout ratio of 40 to 50%, and as earnings grow, have a dividend that can grow with that. So we think we've got plenty of capital to grow the company and have attractive returns, and this is kind of the way we think about it. You know, there's good optionality. I think we can be patient and disciplined about the way we think about it and doing things that we think are going to drive returns, long-term growth, and the ability to invest in the company. Now, you know, inorganic positioning, inorganic growth is something that we want to look at. I thought what we'd do is just kind of go through, you know, the past 5 or 10 years and just go through the various buckets of inorganic acquisitions that we've done and kind of rate them on a strategic scale and on a financial scale. And probably 5 or 6 years ago, we talked about new growth platforms, and these were businesses that we really weren't in, that we were acquiring into new spaces. And I think strategically, by and large, we did a pretty good job there. But I think what we've learned over time is that these were hard to come in and generate. And when I look at financial, our target is 15% cash on cash return by year 5. So that's the metric that we're looking at. The new growth platforms were just hard to get the kind of financial return that we want to expect and want to get. Most of the capital went into our domain. Most of the capital went into energy, renewable energy, services, healthcare, the things, aviation, avionics, the things that are in the GE sweet spot. And these strategically are on track with what we want to do. And financially, by and large, we've done a reasonably good job in that space over time. And then in NBCU, you know, our strategy was to make the asset more valuable in a very dynamic media space. And we had some hits and misses. If you look at the deals that we did from Telemundo to some of the digital plays, but the big ones we got right. Universal was a very good deal for NBC as we went through this time period. All the cable assets, we've been able to generate good returns. So I would say if you look back and look at the financial returns, we were above our cost of capital, if you look at it in aggregate, but below our 15% goal. And I think as we go forward, the types of deals that you're going to see us do are right in the middle, are the strengthened infrastructure type deals that we think and we know we can execute on as time goes on. Now, you know, here's some ones that we did well. I think if you look at oil and gas, life sciences, and wind, these are three that we did extremely well. And one of the keys is they all play to GE's core competency. In the case of oil and gas, we were able to leverage the Global Research Center. We were able to build on customer relationships that we've already had. We were able to build up their service franchise. I mean, we have a very strong oil and gas franchise today. In the case of life sciences, again, good customer relationships, good service revenue. We're able to invest in the key strengths that we bring in terms of the Global Research Center. Very strong. And in the case of wind, you know, in this time period, we were able to take kind of a second-tier wind player that we acquired in 2003. And by 2010, we ought to be the number one wind player in the world. And we've been able to utilize every part of the GE skill set. So as we do inorganic growth, or if we do inorganic growth in the future, it's going to be in the key domains, not new platforms, and it's going to really leverage all of the core competencies like we were able to do in these three places. So that's a little bit on the portfolio. Lots of cash to be reallocated, discipline around how we do it. In terms of long-term growth, I mean, there's four things that we've really focused on for a long time. Investing in technology, building the installed base, positioning the company to grow around the world, and really having a very strong focus on two big solutions, clean energy and affordable health care. And these are the kinds of initiatives that are going to drive long-term organic growth equal to or greater than our peers as we focus on the future. In the case of technology, you know, we've invested a lot each year. We're going to put probably $20 billion in a 3-year time period into product spend. It's the one budget area that grew in 2009, will grow again in 2010 by double digits. And we've filed 20,000 patents this decade. So we're probably the biggest U.S. filer of patents. And our focus on technology in the near term is just more products and more price points, filling out the products, product lines as a way to grow margins and grow share. I mean, we have as many or more product launches in this time period as we've had in any 1 or 2 year time periods in the history of the company. This gives you a sense for energy. It's just, I could do a chart like this for any one of the GE businesses, but this shows where we started the decade, which was primarily a U.S. gas turbine business, and where we end the decade with an incredible array of technologies, leadership technologies, and the point that, you know, the U.S. gas turbine business, which was half our revenues, you know, almost 10 years ago, is really only 10% of our revenues right now. And so we've really been able to diversify and grow this business despite the fact that the U.S. gas turbine market hasn't been that strong over the last 5 or 10 years. So this is just, I think, what good technology can do for GE and how well we're positioned. Sustaining innovation. You know, this is offshore wind is a small business we acquired in Europe 2 or 3 months ago. There's going to be lots of offshore wind that gets invested in. We expect we ought to get 20 or 25% market share of that activity. Molecular pathology is a key technology we can put in our life sciences business that comes out of our research centers. The LeapX will be the next narrow body engine that we launch. We expect to launch that in association with the new Chinese narrow body. This also can be moved into the business jet space. Water reuse is going to be the way that we grow the water business in a place where we think GE can lead. So we're still doing lots of innovation, and we're still using technology as a key way to grow the company. And then just filling in places using partnerships. We've got two in healthcare, one with Intel, which is going to take our technology into the home. We've got one with UPMC, which is information technology around pathology. We've joint ventured with Google to take Smart Grid into the home. We own 8% of A123, which is one of the leading electric vehicle companies. We're doing what we call reverse innovation. We're doing a joint venture on small steam turbines in India, which we think we can grow globally. We're in discussions with the Ministry of Rail in China to do high-speed rail technology from China into the U.S. as a way to compete with some of the big players there. So we just have lots of great technical ideas and technical programs that are coming through the company. Services has really withstood as tough a test in 2009 as you're ever going to see. And through it, we have grown our backlog, we've grown our CSAs, we've grown our margins, we've grown revenue. If you think about 2010, all of the businesses will continue to have positive service revenue growth with the exception of transportation. So again, we'll have another positive revenue year next year, another positive margin year and margin rate year in our service businesses. So again, this has really withstood a very tough economy, and all the things we've said about where we stand have really proven to be true. And here, our focus really is on, you know, protecting what we have, protecting the installed base, but then extending these markets beyond just the current installed base, because we think we're really good at this. We can drive technology, and this is really, you know, this is where 70%, 70, 75% of our industrial earnings are really on this page. So we think we can grow this at 2 to 3 times GDP at high margins in a competitively advantaged way. One of the reasons is we own the technology. I mean, we've invested in the technology. We continue to refine the technology. The Global Research Center is best in class at the technology. And whether it's remote monitoring, something we've done for a long time, inspection and repair, now moving into more domain workflow expertise and CSA modeling that improves our own margins, we've been able to work up the value chain with our customers as a way to leverage our technology in the future. And it's just hard to repeat. This, again, I think if you think about all the times we've spoken about our competitors or small companies' ability to encroach into this service model, this really has stood the test of time. And it's mainly because we invest in it and we grow it and we position it for the future. Here's the aviation example that we like to show. You know, I'd say that 2008, 2009, from a freight and revenue passenger miles, this is one of the toughest years in the history of the commercial aviation business. Despite that, we grew our installed base nicely because we've just owned the market. We've done a great job on market share. And our CSA backlog has also grown. So aviation services in a very tough market in 2009 and 2010, we'll grow revenue and margins through this cycle because we just own the backlog. We've got a great CSA profile and a lot of the units. There's probably 40% of the units that still haven't come in for their first shop visit. So this is just going to be the gift that keeps on giving. Smart Grid is one of the, you know, what we call more solutions-oriented businesses. This is about a $1 billion business inside GE today, and one that we think is positioned for 20% growth in the future. We've won about 50% of the big city wins that have been announced so far. If you look at the grid itself, GE has probably 40 or 50% of the content that's required in one of the big city projects. And our priorities here, again, are to continue to win these orders, add to our capability both organically and inorganically, continue to drive software and software performance, and just really drive great success in some of the high-profile projects like Columbus and Miami, Tokyo, and some of the other things we're doing globally. The other place to grow in services is around customer productivity. We're doing this in every business, but this is the example we have in healthcare, where we're doing lots of work around asset management, performance solutions, labor efficiency, working in the C-suite in concert with our information technology business to drive healthcare productivity. And this is a multiple $100 million business today inside GE Healthcare, and one that we think can be a $1 billion business as we go forward, because GE just has that kind of footprint inside our hospital executives. Emerging markets, global growth is again another driver. We tend to divide the world up, not in classic terms. In other words, we don't have classic emerging market, developed market terms, but we have two priority regions, one that we call resource-rich parts of the world, and the other one we call rising Asia. And these are segments that exist inside GE. Resource-rich is exactly what it says. These are the countries that have oil, natural gas, coal. So it would include a lot of the emerging world, but also countries like Canada and Australia. The rising Asia is what it says, China, India, Southeast Asia. And the combination of these two regions is about $31 billion in revenue in 2009. We'll grow at 2 to 3 times GDP in 2010. And what we've tried to do here is capture the breadth of the company and company-to-country initiatives, where we can take multiple touch points and bring them to bear in front of the customer or in front of the government, localize to drive good long-term growth, and then position ourselves as some of the leading players. This is like the Mubadala deal. So again, we are very well positioned to win as these countries grow and emerge in the future. Here's China. I mean, we just had a big set of announcements in November in China. You know, the C919 will be the next narrow body launched. We think that plane could have the most GE content of any plane in history between the engine, the avionics, the electric power. And so we think that'll allow us to get down the learning curve on a lot of our technologies and be well positioned for whenever Airbus and Boeing do their narrow bodies, which we always have to anticipate, or in case there is a re-engineering that might take place in the narrow body, we'll be advantaged for those activities. In China, we basically localize all the healthcare products, or are on our way to localizing all the healthcare products. We think that could be, you know, we've blown past $1 billion. We think that could be multiple $1 billion in healthcare in China. Locomotives, we just doubled. We did an additional 300 units. We got orders for another 300 units in China. We're very well positioned to do both manufacturing and sales in the with the Ministry of Rail in China. And energy, just multiple opportunities, whether it's in clean coal, wind, or other activities. So, you know, we're playing through to the next round in China and see lots of opportunities to continue to grow. Oil and gas is, you know, just exciting. I mean, it's we are in interesting places like Angola and Algeria, Australia, Russia, China, Brazil. Petrobras in Brazil is going to have multiple $1 billion of orders. Australia, in just our oil and gas business, the business run by Claudio Santiago, will have $5 billion of orders across the country that will be up for grabs that we can potentially win. So you just see lots of global opportunities. And again, this is very much the purview of a big company. A company like GE can just play better in these regions than most other people can play. And so we think we're well positioned for this activity. And then Mubadala, that venture and those relationships have taken hold. We think we're positioned to do lots of things with them in the region. Just as we've described over the past 18 months, the commercial finance joint venture has been formed. We're going to try to do $1 billion of origination in the fourth quarter. And we think this platform that we've got with Mubadala is something that maybe we can replicate in more places. But at the very least, this venture with Mubadala, I think, is going to be very positive and very strong going forward. The two big solutions that are big cornerstones for the GE brand are eco-imagination and health-imagination. We think this really leverages GE's leadership. It's the foundation of the brand. It allows us to be the partner of choice to our big customers. It allows us to align with these big themes and I think really positions the company to get stimulus and things like that, depending on where governments are going, because we do have this kind of association. And we think these two are just evergreen. We think they can last for 5, 10, 15 years as being real cornerstones and pillars of what we do. In the case of eco-imagination, on the left-hand side, we set some very formal commitments when we launched this in 2005 to double our R&D, to reach $25 billion in revenue, to reduce our own greenhouse gases, and we've been a founding member of USCAP. We will grow this even in a downturn in our eco products. This will grow again in 2010. And the team really is reformulating and to go forward from 2010 to 2015. So we're going to kind of re-up how we view clean energy and green technology in the future to, again, double our R&D yet again, to be able to grow at twice the average growth rate of GE, to reduce our own consumption of electricity, of our own output of carbon and our water conservation, and to use this as an engine to create economic growth and jobs. At the same time, we've got an eco-imagination fund. We're going to launch and try to get 20 million smart homes. So this initiative that started in 2005, you know, I think we've kind of closed the first chapter, and we've got the second chapter emerging. And so we think this one will continue to evolve and grow. In the case of health imagination, I think it's rejuvenated the business. You know, I think for the last couple of years, we've been playing defense in healthcare, talking about the deficit reduction and things like that. I think when we look at it right now, we've aligned this with ways to grow the business, investments in core technologies, that our own healthcare costs will be focused and hopefully below the CPI, that our long-term organic growth rate in healthcare, we want to get back to 2 to 3 times GDP. And in order to do that, you know, we really have a number of initiatives that are going inside our healthcare business to launch more products at more price points, to really be a relevant player in healthcare information technology, to really drive rural programs and more around consumer access to healthcare as being a big driver for growth, both inside the United States and globally, to be a productivity partner with our customers, and to be really in the middle of the advocacy points in healthcare. So eco-imagination, health imagination, we think position us for the future as being two real pillars and cornerstones of the GE brand. Last part, just in terms of capability, strategy for the company, it's just, you know, just the unified strength, the unified competitive advantage of a company that can create value from scale. You know, we are a company that's got 40,000 originators, the fourth most valuable brand in the world, and we can make those play in a very advantageous way in front of the customer when we drive enterprise selling and big themes. We've got 35,000 engineers. We've filed 20,000 patents this decade. That gives us the capability in a business like wind to go from number 7 to number 1 in 8 years. That's how we are able to create value. We are a $35 billion sourcer. We've got $15 billion of supply chain capability, all being driven by Lean Six Sigma. We can get scale out of our manufacturing base. We're a low-cost provider. And there's just tremendous advantage to being able to do $150 billion of financing. Our losses are less than banks. We're domain experts. We've got good financial strength. And so the ability to put all these things together over time is what allows us to have margins and returns that are in excess of our peers and be able to do it over lots of generations. And that's what the focus of the company has been and will be. In the case of leadership, you know, again, we've got a strong set of leaders, 4,000 executives at the top of the company, 450 senior leaders, 185 officers, 98% retention in a very tough cycle. We've got global and diverse. We've got real strength, experience, and tenure. And we've continued to invest in leadership and leadership development during this cycle. We've invested $1 billion in education every year during this down cycle. Where we're really focused the most today is in globalization and in technology. We are putting more resources outside the United States. We're changing the way we run the company outside the U.S. For the first time, we've got a CEO of our Indian business running it like a P&L. We're adding 1,000 sales reps in our healthcare business in China this year to be positioned to grow over the long term. And technology, we're adding capability in software, systems engineering, because we want to have the human resources that can drive good long-term growth in technology. We're building pipelines in functional expertise and P&L management. Inside each one of our organizations, what we've tried to do is invest in really domain intelligence type functions. How can we do a better job of predicting what's next? How can we bring people inside the company that could have seen some of the challenges we've had in the past 24 months? How do we do a better job of predicting the future and planning for it? Intensive recruiting. We'll do as much or more recruiting on campuses this year and last year than we ever have. And so we continue to drive the GE leadership approach and the GE leadership brand. And ultimately, that's got to pay off in business results. I mean, on the left-hand side, just some key places, you know, why we work. We just have more scale in technology in places like the Global Research Center. If you think about buying Nova Pignone in the late 90s, which was a state-run oil and gas business, there was basically nowhere outside of Europe, and being able to infuse aircraft engines technology through the Global Research Center to create a number one player in the span of a decade, that's the enterprise strength we have inside GE. Domain expertise, being able to go through an aviation cycle with GECAS side by side with our aviation business and be able to drive good profits through tough cycles, that's what we can do. The business interface, the brand interface, company to country, I don't think anybody's played China better than GE has over the past 5 or 10 years from a standpoint of competitiveness, revenue growth, margins, and the things we can do. Brand, being able to build big brand and capability, depth and experience. Again, talking about what we've done in wind over the past decade. And just culture, learning from each other, constantly driving for a half a turn or a full turn of working capital. You know, at GE, one working capital turn, if we can drive Lean Six Sigma, is a huge amount of cash, has a huge impact. And so on the right-hand side, we have a set of 18 peers that we look at, and through this cycle, through this year, measuring ourselves against them in revenue, organic growth, margins, returns. You know, we want to be in the top 25 percentile on these key metrics against our key competitors. So if you think about the strategy, simpler portfolio, lots of cash and capital allocation, enduring organic growth initiatives, and the way to pull it together in a way to be better able to compete and drive margins and returns. That's where I think we've been, and that's what we're doing inside the company. Now, with that foundation, what I thought I'd do is just talk a little bit about 2010, take you through some of the key businesses, take you through a framework, and give you a sense for how the company's going to perform in the near term. So here's our framework page. You know, in the no guidance world, this is this is the Da Vinci Code, I guess, or something. But I'd say in a word, flat. You know, it's we're looking at industrial. This is a combination of energy infrastructure, technology infrastructure, and C&I. We think will be about flat year over year in op profit. You know, the positives are the NPI growth, lower costs, better margins, global position, services. The negatives are, you know, if you look at a business like our transportation business, there's still multiple thousand rail cars parked, you know, and so you're not going to get some growth in businesses like that. But I'd say we look at operating profit there being more or less flat. At NBC, we think operating profit will be down slightly. It would be up ex Olympics, but you know we're just counting on having tough economics around the Olympics, and so that'll be slightly negative when we look at NBC going into next year. Capital Finance, you heard Mike talk last week. We think the Capital Finance earnings will be about flat year over year. And then the other big piece is in corporate. And here there's, you know, if you think about 2009, we will do, you know, somewhere around 18 cents, you know, 18, 20 cents a share of restructuring in 2009, right? So we did a lot of restructuring in 2009. We may do half that in 2010, but the offset of that is, you know, I would say pension expense will be after tax another 7 to 10 cents, something like that. And that reflects both the amortization of the losses and the discount rate when I talk about that. So we think those more or less offset on the corporate lines. You know, we think we've got the financial risks more or less in balance. And as we go through the year, look, if we see opportunities to do more restructuring that makes the company and puts the company in better position for 2011 and beyond that are good payoff projects and things like that, we're going to do them. So that's basically how we see the framework going from 2009 to 2010. Similarly, revenue, we see about flat. And the way that I would kind of pick through the revenue lines is capital will be up slightly, even while it's shrinking, because you have higher margins and you probably have some FX benefits on the capital side. NBCU and CNI will be up. That's really driven by the Olympics as much as anything else, and maybe a little bit of improved markets in CNI, but we're not counting on a whole bunch. Infrastructure services will be up on the service side. We've got good backlogs, pretty good visibility to those businesses, and so pretty good strength on installed base growth offset by maybe lower capacity utilization. And then equipment we think will be down maybe 5 or 10%, you know, and this is based on ending the year with about $45 billion of backlog, maybe having orders that are about flat year over year. So we think equipment revenue could be down a little bit next year. Services up, C&I and NBC up, and GE Capital up a little bit, just given the some of the dynamics. So that's the outlook on the revenue and operating profit and earnings. As stimulus, we've talked about a lot. You know, we think in terms of orders and revenue, this is always hard to, you know, I mean, there's no really exact science around this, but we think we've probably gotten $11 billion of orders and revenue this year, about half, you know, a little bit more than half inside the U.S., but very strong globally as well. And the places that we're focused on are, you know, some of the renewable energy. You read about the Caithness wind deal last week. You know, those projects we think will continue to come. Smart grid, a lot of this is being driven, or some of it anyhow, is being driven by stimulus dollars. Some of it's happening on its own. Healthcare access, I mean, you know, the China healthcare market's really strong. And a lot of it's driven by government spending to improve consumerism in the remote regions. There's infrastructure, healthcare IT in the U.S. and China. I'd say the healthcare IT, we've got no benefit from the healthcare IT stimulus in 2009. We think that could be attractive in 2010. I mean, meaningful use will be better defined in 2010. We think that might be beneficial for the business next year. Infrastructure projects, you know, big Petrobras projects, U.S. rail, water reuse and tax credits, technical funding. So, you know, we're just well positioned as this continues to roll out. We just thought we'd give you an update on where it stands and how we do it. And like I said, a lot of it is outside the United States, as well. Margins, you know, are at a pretty high level historically. And we think margins will continue to stay at a pretty high level going into 2010. We'll have a positive value gap in 2010. We had a very positive value gap this year, but we'll still have a positive value gap in 2010. We've got the benefit of restructuring. You know, again, guys, we've done $6 billion restructuring over the last 3 years. So, I mean, we've done as much restructuring over the last 3 years than probably at any time in the history of the company, and those benefits spill over into next year. Services will still be a positive mix element. Business mix is negative, and that's some of the higher margin businesses like transportation aren't going to be growing, and businesses like C&I that are lower margin will be growing, so you get a little bit of negative mix there. And the Olympics is just lots of revenue and no margin. So that's, you know, that's that doesn't work so well if you're talking about margin rates, right? And that's how you look at margin rates, roughly flat. You know, cash is pretty good. We'll generate $16 billion. You know, when I was here a year ago, I said $14 to $16 billion of industrial CFOA. We'll hit the $16 billion of CFOA. You know, basically, if you think about the calculus of it, you're losing a couple billion dollars of progress over the last 2 years, maybe $5 billion of progress. We're making up for it in working capital. So if you think about, you know, earnings plus depreciation plus working capital reduction is how you get $13 to $15 billion of cash. And the teams have done a nice job of executing this year, you know, and that momentum will carry forward in the future. The top right is, you know, what we talked about when we announced the NBCU deal. So that's the same arithmetic that we talked about before. And so we'll continue to work on working capital initiatives. You know, security should close in the first quarter. NBCU will, you know, probably in the year. I mean, I'm not going to make any predictions on when that's going to close. And look, we'll have opportunities in 10. You know, we went after the Ariba deal. You know, we would have done that deal. We think we're going to have opportunities, you know, based on when NBC closes and things like that, to allocate capital in 2010. And we'll be very, you know, thoughtful as we march through there and see where it goes. But I think the good news is we've got lots, you know, we'll have a good, you know, another good cash flow year, and with the disposition, some optionality as we go through the year. Here's G Capital. You know, Mike reviewed this last week from a E&I and margin and losses standpoint, how you think about 9, 10, and 11, and measure the bar or something like that in 11, and see, and but you know we'll get some earnings growth as you get, you know, as you run through the losses and get in the out years. On taxes, we expect to retain the structural benefits of the tax rate over time, but we will pay higher taxes as we, you know, generate pre-tax earnings as you go through this cycle. We're originating at high margins. We'll opportunistically look at bulk origination in a, you know, disciplined way in the places we want to invest and grow. We'll execute our funding plan. We've already pre-funded all of 10. We'll work on the red assets. We you know, as Jim Colica said last week, we think losses will peak in 2010. And commercial real estate is manageable, but still very tough. And so we're going to work our way through commercial real estate. And I think Ron Pressman talked you through that last week. You know, when I talked to investors and, you know, read the notes after last week's meeting, I just wanted to make one point. We do have some really good franchises in financial services. And after, you know, after the last couple of years, you know, it's been hard to lose sight of the fact that underneath all this, there are some great financial service businesses that we have. I just put three on here. The America's lending and leasing business. This is the basic lender to mid-market America. I mean, we've done like $31 billion of SME lending in the U.S. so far this year. I mean, we are one of the preeminent small and medium enterprise lenders. The new margin rates are 5.8%. The runoff margin rates are 2.8%. This is a business, you know, as you guys know financial services, this is a business that's going margin positive in a very strong way. And that, you know, that takes time, right? Because you have to blend down as you go through it. You know, retail finance, we do financing of all these, you know, retailers that are selling a variety of different things, equipment and recreation type skidoos and things like that. This is a very, really operationally intensive business, and one that banks historically haven't been any good at. The margins of 13%, the runoff of 11%, this is a very operationally intense business. And the verticals, you know, which is $73 billion, this is, you know, these are just places we have more domain knowledge than anybody else in financial services. So I just, you know, the originate to hold model works. We are a great SME lender. We really are the big player in mid-market financing. These are the kind of businesses we want to invest in. I think, look, we, as I said earlier, we extended too far. And that's something I could say over the last 30 years, not just the last cycle. But don't lose sight of the fact that we have some excellent core businesses underneath here that we think are going to generate good earnings growth over time. The energy business, John's in the room. You know, I think we'll be up slightly next year. We'll probably grow margins. We'll see good growth in oil and gas, and flat to up slightly on the energy business. I think the good news for this business is over the long term, this is going to be a gas and wind world. You know, I think, you know, we have a broad technical footprint, but if you had to pick what businesses would you want to be really big in, not just in the U.S. but globally, it would be gas turbines and wind turbines. Those in some way, shape or form are going to be the winners as we look out over time. We've got good product pipeline. We've got a very good global position. We're well positioned, for stimulus. The service remains robust. We can shape energy policy. This is just a great GE business where we've got good competitive advantage. And, you know, I'd say the big question here is what's the demand for electricity going to be? I mean, you know, we've had negative electricity growth in the U.S. and in Western Europe. And so that's going to gate, you know, how fast we can grow. But I love our positioning overall. And almost no matter where policy goes, we are well positioned to benefit as you think about that. And I think on the big wins, on the big orders, you know, we really had a good year. I mean, we really had a good year. We got the biggest wind order in Europe this year. We got the biggest wind order in the U.S. this year. We got the biggest order in the Middle East. I mean, last year we were talking about the Iraq order. This year, you know, talked about this order in Kuwait. We won big in the Australian LNG space. I mean, we will be, from an orders standpoint, the Vetco Gray business and the our oil and gas business will be the peer of anybody in the industry by now. So pretty strong performance overall on energy. Technology will probably be down slightly next year. Transportation is going to have a tough year. Healthcare, I think we see some strengthening in Q4 that makes us guardedly optimistic. I promised people that I wouldn't use healthcare and optimistic in the same sentence, so I maybe violated that rule here. But we do see some strength in the markets, and I think our execution is improving. And then aviation, I think actually the team's done a great job of executing this cycle. Their earnings will probably be down slightly next year, and so we're executing on the new product pipeline. You know, the GNX has to fly next year. We're launching lots of new products across growing services through the cycle. We've done a lot of restructuring in these businesses, which should help our cost point. Driving global growth. We had a couple aviation transactions last year that won't repeat. That really is what's going to impact the aviation business. And then transportation is in a very tough cycle right now. You know, we're picking up some good business outside the United States, but inside the U.S., it's a tough cycle. So transportation will have down earnings. Healthcare should have up earnings. And aviation will be flat to down slightly as you think about this segment next year. And similarly, you know, we won a lot of big orders. We won the Etihad order. We won the American Airlines order. We've grown the business in China and India very substantially. The Joint Strike Fighter got funded for another year. We were just, you know, kind of announced to be the favorite supplier for 100 locos in South Africa. We picked up another 300 kits in China. This life sciences is the biggest order we've ever received in life sciences in Brazil. So we're hustling for business on a global basis and winning more than our fair share when you think about how this business is positioned. C&I will have a decent year next year. We've got lots of new products. We've done a lot of restructuring in lighting and appliances as you think about next year. We've got improved product lines and some really good energy products. I mean, this Energy Star, which really gives you, if your new products are 20% more energy efficient than what they replace, you get a very nice, and you make it in the U.S., you get a very nice tax benefit. So we've got some products kind of rumbling through there. This hybrid water heater ought to do $65 million in business next year. That's a business that we're not even in. We talked yesterday about moving the profile, the high-end washing machine into Louisville. So we see some decent growth in C&I and driving good cash along with that. In NBCU, as I said, the earnings will be down year over year. You know, they'd be up ex-Olympics. The market's better. Scatter, I think, is improved. Stations are doing better quarter over quarter. Cable continues to be excellent. Next year, films, should be better. It'd be hard to be worse. So I think we'll probably be better in films. Parks will improve year over year. We've got to continue to invest in the network to improve our performance there. And my hunch is we'll probably lose a couple hundred million bucks on the Olympics in Vancouver. You know, it's just a tough time for a big event like that. We'll do a good job of selling it, but it's just a more difficult sales environment for a big event. This is kind of what we've created in NBC Universal. You know, we basically owned 100% of fundamentally a network business 10 years ago. We went down to 80% of a better cable and media enterprise. Now we go down to 49% of an even better cable and media enterprise going forward. At the bottom, we kind of, you know, I think when we started, we really viewed as being so dependent on advertising was a negative. And so we've diversified the revenue mix. And so, I think we've just positioned NBC Universal. We think that this is going to be a good enterprise going forward. We're a substantial owner. We expect to generate good earnings from this as we go forward, take some cash off the table that we can redeploy. And so we're quite happy about how this deal worked and where we're positioned for the future. So that's the framework for 10. What I thought I'd do is just give you a sense for how we're managing our team. You know, basically our leaders get compensated. They have a base salary. They have an annual incentive compensation that's really based on how they do in a given year. They get paid. They get stock options. And then we have a three-year long-term incentive plan that we basically go out to about 1,000 of our top leaders, and we do it roughly every 3 years. So we're going to launch a new plan for 2010, 2011, 2012. And it will have four key metrics. The first one is cumulative EPS. And our managers are going to get compensated based on a substantial growth in EPS as we end the credit cycle in GE Capital. As we continue to execute on service and other equipment growth through this cycle, you know, we should see a good earnings bounce back in this cycle, and our managers are going to get compensated accordingly. That's goal number one. Goal number two is good cumulative CFOA, you know, to make sure that we continue to generate a lot of cash, a lot of free cash flow that the business has done, and this will be the second metric that we have, and just to make sure that we have not just earnings growth, but high-quality earnings growth and good cash flow that goes with that. That our industrial return on total capital in 2012 is at a high level, that it would be at in the top 25% of our industrial peers. This means that we're going to have to deploy cash in an investor-friendly way, that as we generate cash, we're smart about how we use it. And this is a key metric. And in many ways, these three metrics have been part of our long-term incentive plans for a long time. And so this is really nothing new. And the last thing, I think it's just quite important that we hit our ending net investment targets in GE Capital. I want investors to know that, you know, that it's important not just to hit that, but to hit the earnings at the same time. So it's good to have both these metrics, you know, that they balance one another off. And that these four metrics are the cornerstone for a three-year incentive plan for the 1,000 top leaders. And it's a one-company plan, right? So in other words, we basically have this as a one-company plan, and it's simple, and it's, I think, pretty well aligned with investors as we think about where we stand. So as I went through the framework for this year, I thought it was important to share with you, you know, how we're going to compensate our leaders and give you a sense for that. So now looking forward. So I think simpler company, lots of cash to redeploy, good growth initiatives, you know, pulling it all together. 2010, you know, I think is a positioning year that can lead to the next few years. And what I want to do now is just maybe wrap it up on a couple of pages, just looking forward. So the first thing I'd say is just, if you go back to the day Lehman Brothers went bankrupt to the present day, you know, look, we've gone through a lot. We put you through a lot. And I want to give you a sense of, you know, kind of where we stand and what we've done. You know, I think when we sat here a year ago, it was all about playing defense. I think we sit here today, we think we've repositioned the company and we're ready for the next cycle of growth. But if you go back to the things that we said we were going to do a year ago, you know, keeping GE Capital safe and secure, equity raise, dividend cut, more liquidity, right? Funding improved, lower leverage, better ratios, met the base case in losses, gone through incredible increase in losses, I think gotten to a safer place from a regulatory standpoint. So in this side, I think the team's done a lot to reposition the company and put us on a value-creating path in a dramatically changed financial service industry, but one that we can look at and generate good earnings and high returns in a disciplined way, but through a lot of activity that we've done in the last 15 months to position ourselves in this spot to go forward. Outperforming a tough environment, we did a lot of restructuring. We actually increased our NPI. We increased our advertising. We got stimulus. We did global investment. We got our margins improved. You know, I think if you think about us from an industrial standpoint, we'll be able to begin the next cycle with very strong initiatives at higher margin rates and returns and a good competitive position. And so we've done a lot on the industrial side. And from a financial flexibility standpoint, we generated, you know, we'll generate CFOA at the high end of our range. I think we've done some strategic divestitures. We've increased the cash balance both at the parent and at GE Capital, and our ratings are stable. So it gives us a chance to have flexibility to create long-term value. So I think whether it's around GE Capital, whether it's around the industrial business, whether it's around cash flexibility, you know, we've done a lot this year so that when we move through this, you know, it's a company that can play offense again. And that's, I just want to give you a sense for how I think about it and where I think we are going forward. Here's what I talked about, the brand. You know, I think we're very well positioned in emerging markets. We're a company that can do these big solutions like clean energy in a trusted way. We're a technology leader. We're a low-cost, high-quality manufacturer. We're a good partner. It's a trusted brand. Again, I can't predict exactly what the environment's going to be over the next few years, but if you think emerging markets are going to grow faster than the U.S. is going to grow, we're pretty well set for that. If you're not sure there's going to be much tailwind, we are a good organic growth investor. If you think that cost is going to be important, we're a low-cost manufacturer and supplier. So I think we've gotten the company positioned into lots of the volatility or lots of the challenges of today's environment. We've got the company ready to perform. The renewal is really about a simpler portfolio, built around real core competencies of technology and services and global brand, financial discipline and people, and a sense of having great leadership franchises, generating a lot of cash and deploying it in an investor-friendly way, having strong, enduring growth initiatives that will continue to produce, and a unified competitive advantage that should give us margin rates and returns equal to or better than our peers. So that's the focus on the renewal and the strategy. You know, lastly, just what I want you to believe as you walk out of here, right? Consensus for 2009 is about 99 cents a share, something like that. 2012 is going to be a lot higher than that. And here's what you have to believe to think that that's true, right? $12 billion of losses, Fed base case, will go through that this year. A normal year for GE Capital would be $2 to $3 billion of losses. If that just gets cut in half, you know, over 11 and 12, that's $6 billion. And even if you have a higher tax rate or something else, that's a lot, right? And so as you originate at higher margins, as you go through these losses, you know, we would be extremely disappointed in our GE Capital business if we didn't see reasonably robust earnings growth as we walk through this. Okay? So just, that's point one. Point two, 70% of our industrial earnings are in services. In this cycle, services have grown its revenue and margins. I think it's highly likely that that business, you know, if the world gets better, will still grow its revenue and margins. It generates a lot of cash. It's competitively advantaged. It's in backlog. It's visible. And so I think you feel pretty good about that, right? You feel pretty good about that portion. Equipment backlog is strong. We've got NPI. We've got globalization. We've got stimulus. You know, I'm not here to predict exactly what the shape of the recovery is going to be or be able to do it country by country. But I think it's pretty safe to say that on the equipment side, which again, you know, is another part of the earnings on the industrial business, we're going to reach a new peak. We're going to come out of this with pretty good margins on our equipment, with a pretty good backlog, with lots of, you know, tailwind, however it gets created. And so I think you've got that to look forward to. You know, it's in the worst economy since 1940 and 2009, you know, our equipment revenue out of our major equipment just wasn't that bad. And so as that gets better with high margins and tailwind, that's pretty good. And then the last thing is just optionality around cash, right? And I know that's on your mind, and I don't have specific predictions and things like that. I would just do just one arithmetic. I'm just in your own mind. To just say, here's one arithmetic thing that could happen, you know, which is if you got $8 billion, right, and let's just say when you got it from NBCU, nothing was appealing at the time. You had no really brilliant ideas, and you just use it to either buy back stock or retire the preferred stake. That creates an earnings per share in excess of any dilution we'd have from NBC, right? So if you said, you know, if you woke up on that day, you had the cash, you had nothing that inspired you, just to put it in your head about one thing that could happen, you know, so I just think in the near term, the company looks okay. If you just plug in those sets of assumptions and look in the end, this is how I'm going to pay the gang. Is to make these things take place and happen over time. So in conclusion, what I want you to walk out of here, the same 5 points. We position the company for solid earnings growth as we look at the future. Our strength in technology and services and global markets, I think, positions us well for today's environment. I think we've really defined the portfolio that really is based on GE's core competency. We think the worst is behind us in financial services. GE Capital business will be smaller, but still a meaningful part. And we plan to generate a lot of cash and be extremely thoughtful in the way we allocate that capital when you think about the company going forward.